And that will take us to item 8, the consent agenda. This is usually a group of items that we approve in one action. The council has had an opportunity to review these items. And unless there is a particular item on the agenda that someone would like, any member of the council would like to pull for further discussion and individual action, we will approve these in one motion. Before we get to that, this is also an opportunity for members of the public to once again come forward if you would like to comment on items that are on consent. Those are consent items 8A through 8J on this evening's agenda. Is there any member of the public who would like to comment on consent items? Okay, seeing none, we will close that public comment period as well. What is the will of the council? Any items? None this evening? Okay. Then with that, I will approve a motion, or I'll entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8J.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, and I believe we have an item in there, do we?
Nothing to read, Mayor Farrar. No titles to read.
No titles to read this evening. Okay, good. Okay, with that, roll call, please.
Council Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Council Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item 9, our first public hearing this evening. Item 9A is consideration of a proposed ordinance amending portions of Title 16 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code, revising land use regulations and the approval processes to ensure consistency with the Arroyo Grande General Plan. Good evening, Teresa.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Tonight's proposal is a cleanup amendment for Title 16, which is also referred to as the Development Code. And this is running concurrent to our Development Code update process, which we've completed a portion of concerning commercial districts. We're going to be bringing forth revisions concerning residential districts soon. But in the meantime, there are some cleanup items that we wanted to attend to, and that's the proposal tonight. I'm going to briefly go through some of the changes, which include removing some redundant definitions, revising some, including the definition for fast food restaurants, and adding a general retail restricted land use category. In Chapter 1608, another cleanup item was making it internally consistent that the review of architectural review applications goes to Planning Commission when referred by the Community Development Director. I'll go ahead and read the amended definition for fast food, which means an establishment whose principal business is one that offers quick food service, primarily for takeout, which is accomplished through limited menu of items already prepared and held for service, and that is characterized by high automobile accessibility, self-service, short stays by customers, and having late or long hours of operation. This is a cleanup definition that was just brought to our attention when we were going through code amendments for formula businesses. Fast food restaurants are only prohibited where they are prohibited by the formula business ordinance. And I'll discuss that a little further when we get to drive-through retail. Regarding revisions pertaining to chapters 1616 and 1620, we are proposing changes to make consistent the noticing, approvals, and reporting of administrative approvals concerning minor use permits. Those are approved or decided by the Community Development Director and reported to the Planning Commission on a consent agenda. The effective date will then be the day after that reporting to the Planning Commission, or 10 days, whichever is longer. A change for pertaining to state law for lot line adjustments and certificates of compliance is also included in the proposal this evening. whether a public hearing is not required. Chapter 1636 is our commercial and mixed-use standards and land use regulations. We have gone through those quite extensively in recent updates. There are a few things that, now that we've been operating with it for a while, have come to our attention. We are proposing that building size standard may be modified by CUP in the office mixed-use district. A correction designated as not permitted in the Gateway Mixed Use District or the Regional Commercial District. And concerning recent approved projects that came right before this, the ordinance that implemented these regulations went into effect. There are some drive-through services in those districts, and in concerning the Regional Commercial District, there are some forthcoming applications to you. So staff wanted to bring that to your attention to see if it was the council's desire to make any modifications. The DT, the drive-through retail line there on the bottom, would include drive-through fast food restaurants. So that's where such uses would be allowed or disallowed in each respective zone. And no changes are being proposed this evening concerning that. Concerning Chapter 1648 and General Use Standards, 1652 Specific Use Standards, we have a proposed change regarding non-conforming uses and structures to address them with a CUP, providing for a potential 5-year amortization period, and this is just to allow for owners of a non-conforming structure or use to be able to come forward in a discretionary venue and be able to address their use instead of having to make variance findings, which are very difficult. And Section 1652, a change regarding second residential dwelling units. We have in our ordinance that deviations from standards can be addressed through a minor use permit, and sometimes it's felt that deviations need to be discussed in a public forum, and we are proposing that CUP language be added. Those are the most of the changes that are included in your packet. The Planning Commission has recommended that the Council introduce a proposed ordinance to amend the Development Code for minor revisions to land use regulations and approval processes and to ensure internal consistency with the general plan. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for Teresa on the staff report? Any? Councilmember Dickens?
Yeah, Teresa, I just had one question. We've added language in here under Exhibit A, 16.04, under definitions, under general retail restricted, and then we have some examples of what that might be. And then I'm looking back at... And basically what we're talking about is retail stores whose principal merchandise is restricted to customers age 18 years or older. Where would tattoo parlors fit in? Would that be actually a definition that would be under personal services restricted?
That's correct.
And has that already been defined?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Councilmember Guthrie?
This is the one I asked you about earlier today regarding the in the tables, looking at the village mixed use versus the office mixed use and the maximum densities and the way they're one of them is based on gross project area and the other one is just gross per acre. And I think I forgot what we actually were saying. Was the intent to have them both be gross project area or is there a reason why they read differently?
The intent here is to base it on gross project area, and this it came to my attention today. It can be a modification proposed by council, and this is describing the basis on which to calculate the density when only a portion of it is residential and a portion of it is commercial. So if it is the council's desire, we could make sure that the language is consistent and reads based on gross project area for those definition, for those standards in 1636.020.
As I'll just say, that we'll add that to the discussion.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's my only question.
All right. This is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Anyone? Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion of 9A, bring this back to council. Councilmember Guthrie, why don't you start us?
Well, I guess I'll units are counted, bedrooms count as multiple units, so three bedrooms really, really, you know, unit and a half and those kinds of things, that, that it's really not quite as quite the density that we're probably thinking of. But I do think it's something that we do need to discuss, because I don't think that was really the intent of developing it that way. The other comment, I'll just on the two discussion, I don't have any issues with any of the basic language changes or anything. I do think that we should be allowing the drive-throughs in the regional commercial area. I mean, clearly that's a car-intensive area. Banning drive-throughs, of course, there's going to be issues with making sure there's not conflicts and that they work out traffic-wise. And even though we've already approved, I count them up today, there's seven or eight drive-throughs already in the gateway area, depending on whether you count the night deposit at Washington Mutual or not. I think we should continue to not allow them in the gateway area, because as that area develops and we have more intense pedestrian-oriented development, those drive-throughs are going to get in the way. So I think we should move forward with not allowing them in the future, even though we have allowed them in the recent past. Those two comments.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor, I don't have any major heartburn with any of the revisions that staff has presented. I do think that we need to probably further discuss some of the issues brought up by Councilmember Guthrie. I think there's some legitimate points that we need to maybe clarify and give direction to staff as to how we want to handle that. But other than that, I don't have any additional comments to make at this point.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I'll start off with the CUP issues. I definitely agree that the retail commercial should be CUP. I wouldn't have as much problem with putting the CUP on the gateway mixed use, just because we have allowed so much and it seems to be functioning right now. I wouldn't have heartburn, as Councilor Dickens said, if we left it at not permitted either. So I'm going to leave that to the will of the council. As far as the density issue on the gross, I've had problems with that before at planning when we talked about it. I always thought that it could really get up there quick. We haven't seen that happen yet, but the potential is there. So that's probably something that we should have another cleanup to the cleanup. As far as the rest of the language in here, I'm fine with. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. But I would have to concur, Teresa. I think we really do need to maybe hold aside the this density issue, this correlation between 20 units versus the potential for a mixed use on the high side. And, I'm not certain. It seemed to me along the way this discussion that if we didn't, if there wasn't that correlation of maximum density that we weren't meeting the mixed-use definition or something along those lines. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but, there are clearly examples, I think, throughout the city where the intent of mixed use is appropriate, but the density is not. So I think we really need to go back and examine that correlation. And, I really do believe that that continuing with a mixed-use concept as we have in the city, but recognizing the fact that density needs to be controlled by the site of the location, by circulation, and all of the other factors that need to be evaluated. Density needs and intensity of use need to be determined by that, not the classification. So You know, I'm hopeful that maybe we can hold that out and take another look at it, see if we can't tighten that up.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. I should clarify that we are addressing that issue in our residential update concerning just multifamily districts as well. So we will be bringing that forward to you very soon. And just a note that when we did discuss this for the changes that are already in our code for mixed-use districts, the concern was that many of our lots are small, and that if you're going to put two different uses on it to get any density was would happen only through calculating by gross density. So that was one of the issues that was discussed, but this will come back before you in the residential district update.
Okay. On the issue of the drive-through that Councilmember Guthrie raised, you know, that's been on my mind. You know, I don't know yet where I would come down on this issue, but I do know that you know, sort of the ancillary issues around drive-throughs these days kind of stem towards the consideration of fuel consumption and the price of fuel these days. But more importantly, and one of the reasons why, I guess maybe we ought to see how everybody feels, whether we hold that second item out and take another look at it. It's, again, I'll defer to the council on that. Any further discussion?
Well, I'm not sure we have a consensus.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to say the way it is now, the way it is now, it's not permitted now. I'm not quite sure that was your comment. I mean, it's not permitted the way that it's written now and the way that it was originally introduced. So if we're talking about leaving, we're actually leaving it not permitted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that something
I want it to be? Maybe I shouldn't have said anything, but I think that you know, when one comes forward and the drive-through maybe is the key issue, maybe that is going to be project-driven. But I do actually feel pretty strongly that if we're going to build this intense an area that is pedestrian-oriented, it's a good point about air pollution control in the future, but it really is the circulation element that I'm concerned about, is the number of vehicles entering and leaving a commercial project that's supposed to be pedestrian-oriented. Mm-hmm. So,
anybody else want to comment? Jim?
Well, I think that when we spent the time on the Grand Avenue overlay and looked at specifically the gateway mixed-use districts, our goal was to create a more pedestrian-friendly environment. Given that and the balance between what the retail needs are that are trying to move into that area, you know, it's a toss-up. I know we made the exception with Santa Lucia Bank, and that's, you know, seemed to work out okay, I guess. But in the long run, I certainly agree with Councilmember Guthrie. Our intent is to not allow it. You know, certainly we could, we could put a CUP on there if indeed we needed that flexibility. But I would certainly, at this point, adopt it as is, and that can certainly be changed down the road if we feel like it's too restrictive. I guess that's where I stand, adopting it as it is.
Very much the same.
I'm fine with the gateway. I think the regional commercial should be changed to CUP, though. I think that's more appropriate.
Okay. Well, let's try a motion then, and perhaps the direction that we want to take here will come forth in the motion. We'll see how it sits. So who would like to make an attempt here?
Mr. Mayor, before the motion, can I just clarify that you're referring to drive-through services and not drive-through retail? Or are you discussing both? Drive-through retail would include a drive-through restaurant, for example, any retail, drive-through retail, and there is a general plan policy precluding that in the regional commercial district. Drive-through services like banks and things like that would be okay.
For instance, the drive-through at Rite Aid, that's drive-through retail. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you want to add anything, Steve? I saw you adjusting the microphone.
Well, just another example kind of complicated. It's like the Long's truck that has the drive-through also, but it was placed in the back, and it's the different type of equipment. So.
Right.
That just to provide other example.
Okay. Well, why don't we try a motion, anyone, and with or without the drive-through provision, and see where we go.
Okay. I'll try to. I move that we adopt an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Aroy, Grande, amending portions of Chapter 12.16, entitled 12, of the Aroy, Grande Municipal Code regarding the acute. Oh, I'm reading the wrong one. Sorry. Turned the page too far. Hold on a sec. I'm sorry. Let me start over. I move that we adopt an ordinance of the City of Aroy, Grande, amending portions of Title 16 of Aroy Grande Municipal Code, Development Code Amendment 05-006, revising land use regulations and approval process to ensure consistency with Aroy Grande General Plan. Changing the from not permitted to a CUP for drive-through services in the regional commercial area.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, let's try roll call. Any discussion further? I'm sorry.
Mr. Mayor, my only discussion is what is that motion, Teresa, do then to the our desire to look at the minimum site development standards?
The minimum site development standards, for example, whether to say based on gross project area, would just remain.
Two hearings to discuss possible revisions to the community tree ordinance beginning in June of 2005. At the meeting of August 10, 2005, the commission recommended that the City Council adopt the proposed ordinance revisions by a 4-0 vote. We address a variety of issues related to trees in the commercial, multifamily, as well as industrial zones. Additionally, it also addresses city landmark trees and general tree issues related to project development. Currently, there are no regulations related to areas zoned single-family, with the exception of those landmark trees, which are protected citywide. We've reviewed a number of ordinances and analyzed them from a variety of communities, including San Luis Obispo, Lompoc, Monterey, Carmel, Pacific Grove. Some of these were selected based on their geographic proximity or their reputations for tree preservation. Based on our analysis of these other communities, there are two primary areas for change to the city ordinances that have been identified. First is to establish pruning standards and regulations, and secondly, to establish regulations regarding tree removals on private property zoned residential. Additionally, staff has compiled a survey, which is attached in your report, of other agencies that require tree removal permits and property zoned residential. Some of these communities include Oakdale, Burlingame, Calistoga, Elk Grove, San Marino, Sunnyvale, and Pacific Grove. In researching, we've found that the cities of San Luis and Lompoc have addressed pruning standards by utilizing standards provided by the International Society of Arboriculture Western Chapters. Neither city provides additional standards or regulations, so basically they've adopted the standards that are published annually in these types of publications. These are the called the American National Standard Books. Additionally, the city of Monterey has codified specific standards regarding excessive pruning, while the city of Carmel has informational handouts to supplement codified standards as well. Additionally, the city of Monterey and Lompoc have specifically addressed chopping of trees in addition to standards defined in the ISAWC. Topping of trees is a severe cutting back of limbs to stubs larger than 3 inches in diameter within the tree crown, to such a degree that to remove the normal canopy and disfigure the tree. Furthermore, excessive pruning of more than one-third of a tree's canopy has been found to be injurious to trees. In addition, follow up on that, we received a letter from Professor Wesley Connor, who's a professor emeritus at Cal Poly University in the Horticulture Department, and he states that the guidelines of Western Chapter of the International Society of Arboriculture would not allow for topping of trees nor the removal of more than 25% of live foliage in any one growing year. These trees may survive the improper pruning, but they will never revert back to normal trees. The basic structural limbs will never reform. At best, what will happen is that all young leaf buds that emerge and grow shoots will be numerous and give a bushy appearance. Those that survive will become twigs and woody branches and will have a poor and weak attachments at their origin. They will always be subject to weight and wind related issues, and long term create serious hazards, potential serious hazards. With regards to the criteria for removing, for approving permits for tree removals in commercial, multifamily, and mixed use zones, currently the criteria for removal of trees involve a number of factors. These include the general health of the tree, the locations of the trees related to the site, if the tree poses a safety concern and potential, as well as existing damage due to root or crown cover. When evaluating damage to private property, the damage to sewer lines, utility lines, foundations, drives, etc., are taken into account. In some instances, removing a portion of the damaged area effective and performing root pruning can solve the problem. But root pruning basically is a technique where we remove a section of the sidewalk, and we've, some of the council members have seen this, and as well as some of the planning commissioners. We remove a section of sidewalk to evaluate the damage that the roots have created. If we're able to and are able to determine we can save the tree, then we go in with equipment to basically shave the roots down and repour the sidewalk. There are examples and situations where that is not always feasible because of a shallow root ball. A lot of it depends on the different varieties of trees where the tree is determined at that time to come out, in which case we replace it with another tree on site. This was done, for example, on Traffic Way in front of the old Greyhound stop. We had a large magnolia. We pulled up the sidewalk due to sidewalk damage, evaluated it, found that we couldn't save it. When we pulled up the tree, we found that it had a very shallow root ball of about 2 feet, and this was a magnolia. Oak trees, for example, have root balls that can be up to 1.5 times the size of the tree, while other trees can have a very shallow, very small root ball. So it depends on the soil conditions and the variety of the trees. We tend to apply, with regards to city trees, a higher standard for removal of trees than on private property. Staff believes that some of the measures the city may take to save a tree may not be reasonable to require of a private property owner, given that the tree does not have the same level of public benefit that it does within the city. For example, if it's determined that an owner can save a tree by root pruning and reasonable repairs to the adjacent surface area, the permit will be denied. However, if it's determined that the tree has or will likely damage the structure in the near future, such as a wall or building, the permit will be approved. In addition, if the potential for damages is expected but will not exist in the near future, it does not constitute grounds for removal. Since subjectivity is involved in this and interpretation of the criteria, staff would appreciate Council City Landmark Tree Program, as per council direction at our May meeting when we revised the ordinance the last time. So we're updating our book on the health conditions and locations of our current landmark trees. With regards to tree removals on single-family residential properties, we researched a number of regulations regarding removals in private property and single-family areas. The majority of cities do not appear to have regulations with regards to single-family zoned areas. However, there are a number of jurisdictions that do require permits for either oak trees or trees greater than a specific size. It's been recommended in our tree ordinance that we permit the removal that any oak tree greater than 2 inches in diameter when measured 4 feet 6 inches above the ground would require a permit to remove. Most individuals would probably rather keep their trees since they do enhance the value of the property, and therefore staff believes the regulation will not require a substantial increase in enforcement. We did receive comments at our Parks and Recreation Commission meeting from some members of the community, which stated they wanted to see additional trees added to that regulation, in other words, protect more trees. At this time, staff did not recommend adding additional species. It would result in a number of issues. First of all, it would result in protecting some non-native trees, and some that may be undesirable and can be replaced and grown to maturity in a very short period of time. Second, despite education efforts, staff believes a number of residents would violate the ordinance simply because they were unaware of the permit process. This would create unnecessary enforcement action and put the city at odds with otherwise law-abiding citizens. Third, it would create an increased permitting workload that the city staff currently does not have the capability of enforcing. We're also currently working on a street tree planting and beautification program. We've been working with community groups such as the Tree Guild to look at different areas in the community where we can enhance our community by adding additional trees. One of the projects currently discussed is adding a number of trees along the Traffic Way corridor. So working with other community groups and nonprofits would be a way where we can also work together in enhancing our urban forest. Assessment and removal of replacement of city-owned trees. Again, staff is looking for some direction from council, whether we're kind of going the way you want us to. When it's necessary for repair of city infrastructure and sidewalks, we've recently revised the policy. When repairs are necessary, trees are now preserved unless they are determined to be potentially hazardous as a result of root pruning, which I stated earlier. There are examples where we can create an unstable tree situation. We tend to err on the side of saving the tree when there is a question whether or not it is feasible. The determination that a tree will cause a need for further repairs in the future is no longer a justification for tree removal unless the repairs are determined to be frequent and ongoing problem. Since this policy was implemented 2 years ago, the city has repaired sidewalk, curb, and gutter in approximately 125 street tree areas. Of those, all trees were preserved with the exception of 20. On the main city thoroughfares, including Trafficway, Branch, Grand Avenue, and Halcyon, only 6 trees have been removed that were not diseased, dead, or destroyed by automobile accidents. One of the techniques found to help protect trees also is sloping the sidewalk when you have larger trees. However, due to ADA regulations, you have to keep that slope ratio under 2%. However, if that is council's direction, we can proceed with looking at that as a possibility when we're trying to preserve some of our larger trees on curb gutter, sidewalk, public right-of-way areas. So with that as an overview, now to the changes in the ordinance. With regard to the ordinance purpose itself, one of the things that was discussed and that everyone agreed upon is to add a sentence in the definition or in the purpose 12-16-010, which states, improved communication between the Parks and Recreation Commission, Architectural Review Committee, and Planning Commission regarding tree-related issues and concerns. All three bodies at one point or another do review tree-related issues, and we feel the communication between the three can only improve how the city deals with these with the situation long term. Within the definitions 12-16-020, and these definitions come straight out of the American National Standards books, we've added the definition for excessive pruning, which shall mean removing in excess of one-third, although the book does state 25%, so that could be something the council may want to review. Excessive pruning shall mean removing in excess of one-third or greater of the functioning leaf, stem, or root area of a tree. Pruning in excess of one-third is injurious to the tree and prohibited unless written approval is granted by the Parks, Recreation, and Facilities Director or his appointed representative prior to initiating of work. Toppings and lion's tailing shall be considered unacceptable pruning practices as well. Again, this is consistent with what is in the American National Standards book. Under definitions, Parks and Recreation Tree Subcommittee is also the Parks and Recreation Commission. They will serve for hearing all appeals related to issuance of tree removal permits to the recommendations for the recommendations to City Council. So they are the final appeal body unless recommended to the Council in the event that there is disagreement with staff decision. And that is consistent with the current policy, but we didn't have it spelled out within the ordinance. We also included the definition for topping, which means the severe cutting back of limbs, the stubs larger than 3 inches in diameter, a tree removal permit. Under Section D, standards for pruning of trees on private property, the City Council may adopt by resolution standards for the pruning of trees on private property with which all licensed tree companies doing business with the city shall comply. All pruning standards shall comply with the standards established by the International Society of Arboriculture. Failure to comply with these standards as determined by the city shall constitute a misdemeanor violation of this chapter and may result in suspension of a tree company's business license, if applicable, as follows. First offense, suspension of a license for a period not exceeding 90 days, and for a second offense or any subsequent offenses, by suspension of a business license for a period not exceeding 1 year. Under D, we've added this topping prohibited. The intent is to ensure healthy, structurally stable, aesthetically pleasing trees and mitigate public liability. Again, we add the definition. Topping shall mean the severe cutting back of limbs to stubs larger than 3 inches in diameter within the tree crown to such a degree so as to remove the normal canopy and disfigure the tree. It shall be unlawful to top or stub trees. Utility line clearance. And we will have to we'll work with Public Works Department and the utilities to make sure that this is enforced. Utility line clearing shall be done by the drop crotch method, which basically, as opposed to some trees, which you'll see are basically shaved on the top, the drop crotch method is creating a V within the canopy so the lines run through the tree. And from different perspectives, it gives you less of a visual impact. All pruning of public trees shall be in accordance with city current specifications in the City Parks Division. The City Parks Division currently does comply with the standards in the books. Appeals regarding denial of tree removal permits are to be submitted in writing, and the city attorney does have some changes to the language here. In writing to the Parks and Recreation Commission before their scheduled meetings. Actions of the Parks and Recreation Commission are final unless appealed to the City Council. Once again, staff recommendations are always subject to appeal to the Parks and Rec Commission and to the City Council should someone disagree with our recommendations. So in a nutshell, those are the changes that we are proposing for the ordinance. Once again, as I stated, we do go by the American National Standards. In here, they do talk about topping of trees. It's not an acceptable pruning practice. They have eliminated it as an acceptable practice, and so we strongly recommend that be adhered to or the council adopt, as well as the pruning objectives, which the book does state a 25% of the canopy foliage should not be removed. No more than 25% should be removed within an annual growing season. We are proposing 33%, so we are we will take council's advice on which way to proceed on that one. So as of this time, if the council has any other questions, that concludes my report, with the exception of Mr. Carmel, which has some language cleanups.
And I apologize for making these changes here at the meeting, but we discussed them beforehand, and it's probably a good idea to address them now. They're all in Section 12-16-070. The first one is in the first line right above the sub A, and that would be removing the words multiple family because the intent here is to expand it to single family sections. So that little prologue would read tree removal in residential, comma, mixed use or commercial zones. A little bit farther on in that section, a comma after the Quercus agrifolia will make it clear that the 2-inch requirement and 4-foot-6 measurements only apply to street trees, not to the oak trees. So a comma after the Quercus agrifolia. And I know these are kind of minutia, but they'll help out. In 12-16-070D on page 5, subsection D1, in the second sentence, we'd like to add the words, at a minimum, comma, all pruning shall comply with the standards established by the International Society of Arboriculture. That's because there may be additional standards applied. And then the last two changes are in 12-16-070F, which is also on page 5. In the first sentence, appeals regarding denial of tree removal permits, we'd like to add the words, by the director, are to be submitted in writing to the Parks and Recreation Commission. And then I'd like to strike the a minimum of 7 business days before their scheduled meetings for consistency's sake and add the following. Park and Recreation Commission within 14 days of the date of the director's decision. With those changes, I think it will be consistent with the other provisions of the code. So in your discussions, if you could include those, I would appreciate it.
Okay. Does that conclude your report, Dan?
Yes.
Okay. Questions, clarifications on the staff report? Yep. Councilmember Dickens?
Yeah, Dan, I had two questions. One just maybe there was some confusion on my part. On page 3 of the staff report, under the title of tree removals on single-family residential properties, in the last paragraph there, we're talking about as recommended that revisions to the city's tree ordinance include requirements for a permit to remove oak trees greater than 6 inches in diameter in single-family residential areas.
That's my mistake. That was a typo.
Okay. Should that be 2 inches?
2 inches in diameter when measured 4 feet 6 inches
okay.
from the base.
That was my confusion. So we're talking about 2 inches. Now, a 2-inch in diameter, I guess in perspective, that seems awfully small. And I know that a lot of times, especially when we're putting in new trees, we're really leaning towards putting in as mature as possible trees, and I know we call those from a 15-gallon as opposed to a 5-gallon tree. Aren't most 15-gallon trees already 2 inches or close to that? Is that?
It would depend on the variety of the tree, but that would be accurate.
Okay. It just seems awfully small, I guess. And my point with this is that. That if we're not going to allow for Well, I guess let me ask you this. The question would be, where did the 2-inch diameter come from? Where is that something that we've kind of just decided is a good benchmark, or is there some standards?
A couple of communities stated a 2-inch for oaks. Paso Robles, I believe, was one of them, although I'd have to look at that. But if the council wishes to increase the size of that, we don't have any objection to that at all.
And as I read the ordinance that is before us this evening on page 4, we talk about the additional language. We're talking about no oak trees or street trees greater than 2 inches. So we're talking about no oak trees, period, as defined. Is that correct?
That was my understanding, but apparently there's a little bit of confusion, so perhaps Dan can clarify that issue.
We were trying to focus for oak trees of that size minimum and all street trees.
So if that's the case, we actually need to reverse the way this is written then. Is that correct?
That's right. Of course, that's a council discretion item. If you wanted to segregate it so that it was no oak trees, period, then the comma would stay. If you wanted to have the size requirement and height requirement, then we take the comma out. Again, it was my presumption that we were talking about any oak trees. Okay. I'm sorry for the confusion.
Okay. Well, that helps clarify, and I'll give my direction. Those are my questions. Thank you, Dan.
Oh, and the definition for lion's tailing, the removal of an excessive number of inner lateral branches from the parent branches, lion's tailing is not an acceptable pruning practice. So we will add that to the ordinance.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. With the correction that Tim just made, I'm a little confused on our pruning standards because I was kind of under the impression that we were not going to apply that to residential. Are we planning to apply pruning standards to the residential single-family zone? And if we are, but we're not going to restrict taking out trees, I'm a little confused on why we want to prune trees, but we would let them come down.
It's only the trees that are covered within the ordinance. We're not. The purpose of this is more for the commercial areas. We're looking at protecting the oak trees in single-family residential, but with regards to pruning standards, those would be more in the commercial multifamily areas.
Okay, so that's going back to again to section 4, the 12.16.070. Maybe the multifamily should remain again because it said tree removal in multifamily residential, and that basically starts then where we get to 5D, which is where it starts talking about the pruning trees on private property. It was defined there as multifamily residential or mixed use or commercial. Otherwise, we're now talking about everything. And so should multifamily remain there also?
Again, that's council discretion. I would say with multifamily probably should remain there, but...
Okay, so because that's what my understanding was, that we are not trying to be the tree police for all residential neighborhoods.
No, we're not.
And it didn't make sense if we were going to allow trees to be cut down, but we were going to worry about how they were pruned. Okay, so let's see. This is a little, well, this is kind of, I think, what drove this, is the Briscoe office complex. Were the trees that were initially planted in there, were they part of the condition, and you may not know this because I'm not sure how far back this goes, as a condition of approval for that project, or were they done at the discretion of the property owner at the time, just as a...
I don't have that information.
No idea. Okay.
Doesn't take view shed issues into account, and then in our pruning, we work with neighbors and try to prune in a way that minimizes the impact. But when street trees are planted, there's no guarantee there won't be some impact to views. We certainly try to plant them so there's no total blocking of views. But sometimes it's difficult to avoid some impact to somebody's view.
So I guess my question then: would this ordinance prohibit us from doing more work on trees than we might otherwise want to do that are starting to impact views? And do we need language in there that is an acceptable reason for doing things to trees that we might not otherwise do because of the view?
I don't think it would impact us at all that severely. I spoke to the individual you're talking to today, and one of the things that the council did during our budget process was that additional money for contracted tree trimming services. So we're going to try to address it that way by thinning the canopies a bit.
Okay. Okay. Let's see here. As far as one of the things you mentioned was this improved communication between Parks and Recs, ARC, and planning, which I think is excellent. I know that they deal with a lot of these issues also. But one of the things that I think we might want to look at adding possibly is while the appeal process would go to you and then or the Parks and Rec and then come to us, we might want to have some kind of notification to ARC and planning of trees that you have allowed to be removed or severely pruned or whatever, so that if they chose to basically appeal to us or appeal to Parks and Rec, either way, that they would have, because I think they're going to be closer hands-on on a lot of that stuff than we might be, and so I would like to make sure that everybody that wants to be informed on this at least has the opportunity to be. So can we maybe have something there that in that improved communication we're sure that they actually know what is going on? Because that was kind of vague. And
what we can look at a way, one of the things I think we want to avoid is creating a bureaucratic system where you have multiple agencies having jurisdiction over a certain tree, say, for example, worst case scenario, and all three groups are wanting to work very well, but in a worst-case scenario picture, you would have a Parks and Rec Commission wanting to take out a tree, a Planning Commission not wanting to take out a tree, an ARC wanting to keep it. And in our research, we basically find only one governing body, only one advisory body in pretty much every jurisdiction we looked at has the ultimate authority. However, from what you're saying, it would be my responsibility to make sure that that word got relayed on to the ARC and Planning Commission with regard to trees that, say, are in the village zoned areas or in specific projects.
I'm just basically wanting to make sure that the communication really is there, so that, because I mean I hear about trees. I mean it is definitely a very passionate topic with our citizens. That when trees, I know that when we did the water tank over by the Women's Center, I heard about, that was when I was in planning. Why are all these trees coming down? And I believe those were mostly eucalyptus. Mm-hmm. And so, obviously, eucalyptus do grow very fast, and it made a lot of sense. But, I know I'm going to hear about it if they come out, and so I would like to make sure that there are enough, safety measures in there that we can be at least asking it. I didn't want ARC or planning to actually be able to review it, but if they want to appeal it to us, and so if they have the information, I think would be useful.
That I agree on that. One of the other things that I'm looking at doing, and this is something that the City of Santa Barbara does, is when they have a tree scheduled for removal, they actually post a sign on the tree saying, this tree is scheduled for removal. For more information, please contact such and such. So that's something we may want to look at doing here as well.
That would be an excellent idea, because obviously once it's gone, it's even then people could call you and find out, okay, there's a good reason for it.
Right.
The other question that I had, talking about this 33% of the pruning, I'm a little confused when we're going back to this, the book that you have, the arborist book, and basically they're specifying 25%, and anything over that can really damage a tree permanently. Why we would choose the 33? I understand you're trying to be a little bit more lenient, but if there's good science behind the fact that anything over 25% is going to damage the tree, we would want to allow more than that, I guess.
Well, again, it came from going through a number of the ordinances, and they went back and forth between 25 and 33. Different cities had different standards on that, and we're flexible however the council wants to advise us to adopt that.
Let's see. I believe that's all for now. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
A couple things, Dan. And I just wanted to confirm in the staff report, and I think you mentioned this a couple of times, but I just want to make sure that.
And I have my arborist here, if he can come up to the mic and address that a little further.
That's okay. I don't need any further elaboration on that. That's not to say we won't ask you to come up on another matter, but. On page 3, let's see, 4 paragraphs down towards the end of the paragraph, where we talk about potential damage. It says, in addition, if the potential for damage is expected but will not exist in the near future, does it constitute grounds, or it does not constitute grounds for removal? And I'm assuming that that's what we're focusing on here, is observed surface disruption, whatever that might turn into, if it's impairing sidewalks, parking lots, that sort of thing. So we need to make a determination here, whether it's minor or severe, and the issue is one of timing. If this is something that's going to be slow developing, and if that's the case, how do we define, I guess, not existing in the near future?
Again, it's subjective. It's kind of hard. You know, if you're looking at a, say, for example, sidewalk damage, and you have, say, small surface cracks, would that constitute removal of a tree now? Is that how the council would like us to proceed? Or would it be something, for example, in front of the Heritage House, where you have significant lifting of a sidewalk? I mean, where do you want staff to begin the process of removing the sidewalk, examining it, reevaluating, see if that's the time to root prune and repair? So there's kind of a threshold there that we kind of need a little direction on. And if a sidewalk's only been raised, or you just have microfractures in the concrete, does that constitute us, you know, tearing up the sidewalk and removing the tree then, or should we wait and see later on if we can root prune and repair then? Again, it goes back to a cost factor with repairs as well.
So I imagine the decision would be more easily made if we could determine that, let's say, for example, two trees were planted in roughly the same general area at the same time, and the behavior of one caused some excessive damage, the behavior of the other was relatively minor, so the timing between the planting and that point in time when we begin to determine or observe, you know, some disruption of the surface, if it's major in one area but minor in the other area, then we have a benchmark and we'll probably leave the other one alone.
Right.
Okay.
Also, a lot of these problems with city trees are being addressed over the last 8 to 10 years. Prior to that, some of the larger trees we have in the community were planted before root pruning techniques were used, before deep well barriers were used. In some cases, the wrong variety were planted in the wrong places 30, 40 years ago, which has resulted in a lot of the damage we have now. So we've been more aggressive at selecting more proper species and proper locations, and using things like deep root barriers to making sure that we don't have the kind of damage that we've had in some of the other parts of town with some of the larger trees.
Okay. I wanted to, we're in the ordinance now on page one, and I wanted to amplify just a little bit on what Councilmember Arnold brought up, sort of in a different direction, if you will. And it does address statement E under purpose, the one that we're going to add. And I would echo Councilmember Arnold's observation that I too think this is a good idea, and I understand where you're coming from in terms of having sort of one oversight entity, if you will, so that we don't go back and forth. But I also feel, and I think you've clarified it, that the intent of this is to, before the issue, before there's any action taken on the particular issue or the tree in question, that the committees that you and commissions that you have indicated here get a complete information picture. And I think we've learned in the past that not doing that can sometimes cause us more problems. And I understand that, you know, we want to try and limit as much bureaucratic noise as we possibly can from these kinds of things, but sometimes we pay the price on the other side of the issue if we don't do that. Related to that, and maybe this is a question for Tim, since we legitimized this group at our last meeting, is there anything in this ordinance that encompasses the same information picture, particularly on public property trees? And I would assume it would be limited to that. but is there a way that we could inquire or are going to be significant?
We are fortunate to have members of the ARC and Planning Commission that participate with the Tree Guild as well. So
okay.
I'm sure they'll hold me to that, standard.
Okay. All right. Good. And the last question that I had was on page 4 of the ordinance, in paragraph L. Any street tree damage destroyed by an individual shall be replaced through payment by the person or persons causing such loss to the city. The amount of such payment shall be replacement value of the tree, so on and so forth. And then we talk about, in addition to any criminal fine or penalty for municipal code violation, any act intentionally damaging or destroying a street tree shall constitute a misdemeanor violation of this chapter. Tim, what is a customary fine when in these kinds of violations?
It's at the discretion of the court, up to $1,000 for a misdemeanor. Typically, if there's no history of doing it, the court doesn't impose a significant fine. But again, this is to compensate the city for the loss of the tree, not a penal provision for the wrongdoer.
Okay.
There was a case not too long ago where actually here, right behind City Hall here, a private individual cut down a city tree in a city right-of-way. And we had the tree appraised at its full gross value, and the city was awarded over $5,000 in damages by the court for this individual removing a city tree.
Okay, good. Those are all my questions. Anyone else have questions in the staff report? All right. This is a public hearing. We would invite members of the community to come forward and comment on item 9B if you so choose. Again, I would ask you to adhere to the 3-minute rule. And please address the council as a whole.
To facilitate a quick report, to hold it to 3 minutes, Tony, I have stuff in writing. Hi, I'm Warren Cox, trustee of the Family Trust, owning the nine condominium professional offices at 1170 to 1186 East Grand Avenue. Our family addresses are 1443, 1450, 1457, and 1531 Deer Canyon Road. I have 3 kids. I have shared with you all the many details of every aspect of our tree project over the past year, from fall 2004 on the above Grand Avenue Professional Building property. I ask that I read to you my letter detailing my personal attitude regarding the ordinance you will be approving tonight, along with several asides. Thank you.
3 minutes.
When does the 3 minutes start, Tony?
Good, it already started.
This is a letter to Arroyo Grande City Council, dated tonight. A recent local op-ed article entitled City Places a High Priority on Preserving Trees by current Arroyo Grande City Manager Steve Adams fails to detail the hypocritical and destructive current city practices relating to its community tree program. Through the city's dictatorial approach to tree management, the city is in essence confiscating private trees and controlling tree management practices on private property. At the same time, the city removed a huge magnolia tree near City Hall without apparent justification and sanctioned the destruction of a century-old oak tree at the hospital. Lack of maintenance and poor tree selection by the city has resulted in damage to our streets and sidewalks, as evidenced on South Halcyon Road. I've been told I'm the baddest man in Arroyo Grande just because I say the term urban forest is an oxymoron in a lot of cases. Even Dave Reagan said all 23 trees on our property should be removed. Recently, the Parks and Recreation Commission ignored public comment and adopted a modification to the already severe community tree program ordinance, which would actually restrict citizens from trimming, topping, stumping, and pruning. In other words, citizens are no longer free to maintain their trees without city approval. An adoption of such amendments by our local elected council is and will be unethical and morally wrong. It is an overreaction to citizen action that attempts to work within an unfair and overstructured ordinance. On my Grand Avenue property, the city recently told me that I could not remove any of the 23 trees on my property, which were planted at the owner's discretion and not pursuant to any city-approved plan. Instead, the city common sense. The current tree ordinance appears to be a misguided attempt to control the lives of our private citizens and will have predictable adverse consequences as evidenced by the city's own failed practices. I encourage all property owners to study these recommendations, which will be going to you tonight, and voice their disapproval with the council's present intrusive regulatory practices. But the good folks and our local neighbors want to put their trust in representative responsible government, which in this situation is naive by our citizens and incorrect, because I believe you, our council, will overreact and approve staff's irresponsible recommendations. And to respond to Mr. Fellow's comment that he is a tree hugger, and to his loyal followers, I say I also am a tree hugger, needing to protect and improve my property, so please leave me alone to do it. I asked you, elected council members, why would anyone plant a tree in this city only to have the city claim ownership and control? Thanks a lot. I went over to 3 minutes, Tony.
It's okay. It wasn't too bad. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Hi, my name is Danny Beher. I'm a tenant at Orrin Cox's property. My wife and I have a small business there. Basically, I'm glad that the trees were removed, mainly because the potential hazard, the liability that posed from the breaking up of the concrete. As an ex-insurance broker, if any of you have dealt with insurance, liability is a very big concern of properties that have been damaged because of concrete and potential liability of people falling and injuring themselves. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council staff. My name is Phil Lozano. I am currently serving as the chairperson for the Parks and Recreation Commission. I would like to take this opportunity to reinforce and support the staff report as presented by Mr. Dan Hernandez. The Parks and Recreation Commission spent 2 meetings and some diligent home study discussing the proposed tree ordinance and did, in fact, recommend the changes as have been presented in the staff report. Upon the council's approval of the community tree program, it would be my hope that the information contained within that document would be distributed to as many residents in the city as possible, and that a continuing program of public education regarding the city's tree policies and programs would be supported by the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Diane Schlageter. I'm also a tenant in Orrin Cox's building at the Grand Avenue Professional Building. And I applaud the city's efforts to aggressively plant and regulate trees in the city. It's part of what makes it so lovely. However, I think it crosses a huge line when it goes over into private property, be it commercial or residential, and assumes the responsibility for what happens to those trees on those property. As a tenant, I need my clients to have free and safe access to those buildings. Those trees posed a huge hazard there in the droppings and in the cracking that was occurring. The landlord did a very responsible thing in taking the position that he did, and to be given such a hard time by the city is shocking to me. Thank you.
I need those anyway. Good evening. My name is Dave Reagan, and I'm a certified arborist. I've been certified for several years, since 1988, and I just want to say that as far as bringing Western Chapter pruning standards in, I think that's a great idea. That's some of the trees I see whacked back. It's a sad thing. So that's I'm all for that. Councilman Dickens, your question on 2 inches diameter. That's at 4.5 feet or breast diameter. So that as they taper up, it's going to be quite a bit bigger, and that's probably bigger than a 15-gallon tree. And then my only other comment on removals, I would hope that the sub-tree committee would have an arborist, like Pete, so we've got somebody that has some knowledge of how trees grow to review the appeals. And sometimes when things come in front of the city councils and you are dealing with your voters, it can work on emotion. I heard of an incident down in Pasadena recently where a consulting arborist came out and looked at a tree in a park down there and said it needs to come out. And there was several people said that that was a good tree and they should leave it. And he was asked to come out and look at it again, and he said I didn't look at it very close. And he came out and took a closer look and said it needs to come out right now. And they didn't take it out. They fenced it. There was a drinking fountain underneath there, and the tree fell over within.
Brought up regarding communication with the Architectural Review Committee. One of the things that I was concerned about and I expressed at that meeting was that we do review landscape on the ARC, and we review it with different criteria, perhaps, than the Parks and Rec Commission reviews it. So I felt that we should have some sort of advisory input into that process of getting permits to remove a tree and then allowing requiring another one to be planted in its place. We review trees based upon the scale of the tree with the building and how it fits the overall site plan and so on. So anyway, I think that's important. It's not here now. It can be there in the future. I'm not too worried about it. I've talked to Dan about it. I agree with the overlay of regulations and commissions and so on getting to be too much of a burden, but I think that can be worked out somehow along the line. At that meeting, that was the August meeting, there were five of us from the Tree Guild there and one other member from the public. One member spoke against it. Five members supported it, so I want to clarify that issue. The other thing I wanted to bring up was something that I've also talked to Dan about, and agree with Dan that you don't have the budget right now, but we may look to you to provide a budget in the future if we can, and that would be protecting trees on private residential property, single-family residential property. In Pasadena, which is very passionate about their trees, they have in their ordinance that certain trees, there's a list of species and a list of size, maturity, and so on, that cannot be removed without a permit on private single-family residential property if it falls within the front yard, the side yard, or the rear yard. Not if it falls in the area where you're allowed to build a building. There's no control over it, but if it's in the side yards, which have been provided for the public space, they need a permit to remove them. Anyway, I think that's all I have to say. I do support this, and I hope that you will support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
My name is Joe Ardito. I'm a physician and a tenant at Mr. Hawks's facility. I was quite sad, actually, some of the trees tore down there, but I quite understand it. And I just wanted to give these comments that a lot of my patients have either walkers or using canes, or they're just very unsteady. And so even any mild inconvenience in the sidewalk and unbalance is enough to have these people fall. So I understand very well Mr. Cox cutting this down. He didn't have anything to gain. This is just done to protect his tenants and protect my patients. And so I very much support protecting trees, especially public trees, but I think their committee should offer some restraint on private property. It places him in an unwary position of being caught between possibly being sued for patients getting injured and caught for criminal procedures if he decides to repair his sidewalks and take down the trees. And so I would urge some restraint on private property for that reason. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi, Mary Ramia. I started climbing trees when I was 7 years old, getting mistletoe out of them. And I'm got up kind of stiff because I climbed some trees today. I climbed a couple of my worst enemies, which are liquid ambers. And anybody plants a liquid amber within 20 feet of concrete, as far as I'm concerned, is a darn fool. When I donated my time for this building over here at the Clark Center, I said, I made some tree wells there, and I said, whatever you do, don't plant a liquid amber. Guess what they planted over there? And a little bitty concrete this thick. So they're going to have to pay the price. When I looked at Orrin's job there, and the concrete curb was cracked, and the root was coming there, the tree's just a couple of feet from there, and the asphalt, and I saw the damage done there. It's a wrong tree for I like trees. We all like trees. That's why we live here. But to plant a liquid amber with near infrastructure is incorrect. And I think this was the biggest problem Orrin had. Is it wrong tree, wrong place?
So I really thought that the city came down way too hard on Mr. Cox, because that sidewalk needed to come out. What I'd like to also talk about is somebody had mentioned a view shed. I hope that that would also be extended to private property. A lot of us have ocean views here locally, and some of the trees have gotten large over the years. So I think we should have the ability to cut those down a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I'm Orrin's daughter, Stacy, and I would like to read a letter that his attorney, John Belcher, wrote to him. You have asked this firm to opine as to the legality of the removal of 7 stumps trees from your property on Grand Avenue. These 7 stumps trees were identified in a December of 2004 letter by Mr. Hernandez as being approved for removal. Since that date, the city has on several occasions modified, retracted, reconfirmed, or otherwise amplified on that original determination. They now refuse to issue a tree removal permit for the 7 trees, citing their city attorney. At the same time, the city staff, Mr. Hernandez, had verbally approved the landscaping plan by Good Green Earth, requested by the city, although there is no ordinance requirement for same. Which plan called for replacement of those 7 trees as well as other trees? It is my legal opinion that the city has effectively approved the removal of the 7 trees, but for political reasons, it is unlawfully and illegally withholding the authorization to pursue the work. There are numerous opinions from certified arborists proving that these 7 trees, and arguably all of your trees, are an imminent threat to your property. The 7 stumps trees have roots which continue to damage curbs, flat work, and other improvements on the property. This creates a hazard to pedestrians and others in addition to the damage to the property. In my opinion, this qualifies removal or grinding of the 7 stumps under the city's tree ordinance, which exempts such conditions from the requirement of obtaining a tree removal permit. I have previously advised you to prune roots on all trees as necessary to protect the property. This is supported by your arborists. See Dave's Tree Service Report. This continues to be my advice, as I believe this action is not intended to kill trees, but to protect your property.
Thank you. Anyone else?
My name is Dave Sturgis, 325 Short Street. I'm not a tree hugger, but I really don't think this thing goes far enough. Having no trees on my property, I couldn't care less about the requirements for trimming, watering, fertilizing, loving, or hugging. I do, however, enjoy the shade and the fruit from my neighbor's trees that encroach into my airspace. Free avocados, two varieties, and English walnuts. Both are quite messy in my yard, and I may request that my neighbor get his trees out of my airspace and just bring the fruits and nuts to my door on a regular basis. Of course, if he did not agree, I would immediately turn him in so that you could have your way with the insolent dog. That would force him to first apply for and pay for the proper permits and take time off of work to prepare for and appear before the Historic Review Committee to ensure that the tree did not have real historic value, that General Washington had not hacked it or Diogenes had not hung his torch on it while hunting for that elusive honest man. The Architectural Review Committee to ensure that the trimming, that by trimming these trees, there won't be an adverse impact on the architectural character of the neighborhood. The Planning Commission, so that they can fine and jail him for not securing an easement over my property in the first place, an obvious and blatant disregard for the law. Oh, how far we've come. Soon, I'm sure, we'll have a creek committee, a view committee, a park committee, a dog committee, and a bird committee. There really is no doubt that the founders of this nation went to great lengths to ensure the sanctity of property owners' rights. So in conclusion, and in my opinion, there are at least two ways to look at this. Either absolute power has indeed corrupted absolutely, or this push by government to require a permit and critical review of nearly everything their citizens do is a loosely veiled attempt to level yet another indirect tax on the public to support more empire building. To you, municipal government, and state government, and federal.
Time sensitive is root pruning with sidewalk. The basic process is that if we determine that throughout the city that we're doing repairs to a sidewalk area, we can't determine until we pull up the sidewalk. Once we pull up the sidewalk, then we're on a time sensitive issue because the roots become exposed to the air, they dry out, and it starts to create damage to the tree. So what we typically do is once the sidewalk comes out, Pete, our arborist, reviews that we take a look at that time to make sure that whether we can root prune the tree safely or if it has to be removed. This has come up in the past. I think, Mr. Mayor, you were familiar with one instance that came up with this. But it's one of those things that's time sensitive that wouldn't allow us, you know, to wait 30 days for a commission meeting or something like that. So that's, you know, it's not stated in here, but I know that's something else that I think I wanted to make sure we clarified with regards to repair to sidewalk areas. As I stated earlier, current city policy is to do everything we can to save the tree, but there are going to be instances where our inability to root prune a tree safely will require removal, which may not be in all instances something that everyone looks upon favorably.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now, Councilmember Dickens, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dan, I have a couple of, well, I've already made a couple of statements, but I'll go over some of the things that I think are good about this ordinance and then some things that I'd like to see possibly amended. The first thing, Dan, is I have a question because there seems to be this idea that the city tonight is making some major leaps into private property rights, and I want to clarify for the record that do we not already in our current ordinance regarding tree removal, do we already have an ordinance that already regulates tree removal on commercial mixed use and multifamily properties? So we're not actually looking, and those are all private properties for the most part, I'm assuming, is that correct? The issue tonight, from the way I'm looking at it, is all we're doing is we're looking at the possibility of including tree removal in single-family zoned areas, specifically, though, in the right-of-way of tree streets. So we're not talking about going on to people necessarily. We're talking about tree streets. Is that correct?
Street front trees. Yeah.
We're not going into their backyards. This ordinance has nothing to do with a tree in anyone's backyard or any fruit falling from someone's tree. Is that correct?
No, the only stipulation would be an oak tree on private property. That's the only tree that we're looking at protecting, whether it's front yard or backyard.
So that's the only thing that we're kind of added here, is to say, okay, we have a streetscape, and we're talking about specifically in the right-of-way, which I believe is part of the road right-of-way to begin with, correct? That the,
yes.
There's an easement for the city owns for street improvements, is that correct?
That's correct.
But it happens to be privately owned property that the city has easements on. That's the area that we're talking about.
Yes.
Okay. Well, my comments are this. I think that the cleanup language is obvious to me that there's a need for cleanup language. I certainly don't want to try the issue of what happened on Briscoe and Grand Avenue in the professional office area here in this particular forum. It's totally inappropriate. But nonetheless, that's pretty much what happened this evening, and that's unfortunate. What we're really talking about here is defining our tree ordinance so that those both working in public service here in the city and those in the community have a clear picture of what the intention really is and how we can work together to, I believe, come to a consensus and a common goal. We certainly aren't here to, and I don't think in the past have been militant in regards to people's ability to do things with their trees. But I believe it's important for us to do it systematically. I believe it's important for us to do it responsibly, and I believe it's important for us to follow specific guidelines, as pointed out by our Parks and Rec director, and the pruning standards that we're looking at adopting this evening. Some of the questions or some of the things I would like to clarify would be, one, my comment earlier in regards to lion's tailing. I believe I like for that definition to be put in there. I think it's just for the common practitioner out there, just to have a definition of what that means. I think it's important.
It's the ones we're only addressing are oak trees within that section for single family residential.
Okay, well, the way it's read here is that furthermore, no oak trees or street trees.
Okay.
Greater than. So so I guess what I'd like to say there is, are we going to look at just oak trees within the street right-of-way, or are we talking about all trees?
I see.
That's the definition that we need to find to look at. And personally, my recommendation would be that we are looking specifically at no oak trees greater than 2 inches in diameter within the street right-of-way, period, and not broaden it to other street trees. That would be my personal recommendation at this point. The other language that was presented, or at least there was some conversation earlier about, I do think it's important, as the city attorney has recommended, that we omit under 1216.070. The strike out multiple family and just keep residential, because I think it just keeps it generic. Because right underneath there we are talking about single family residential zoned areas. So I think that's appropriate. The other language that the city attorney talked about, I think is appropriate, and hopefully in the record that is in there, but I would like to clarify that one addition and state that, in my opinion, what we should be looking at is that no oak trees within the street right-of-ways shall be removed without first obtaining, and again, greater than 2 inches in diameter, without first obtaining a tree removal permit. And I think that concludes my comments, except for Dan. In the staff report, you've asked primarily for clarification on policy. in regards to the manner in which you and your staff approach certain matters. I think that what you're doing and how it's stated within the staff report in regards to holding the city at a higher standard is the practice that we should continue to do. I think that it's unfortunate that members of the public probably don't have access to all the or at least they haven't obtained access, because they can get access to any of the information as to why we do remove certain trees within the public right-of-ways. We as a council, at least I believe we as a council, have made it very clear that we only do so in cases that are in dire need of removal, and that we do things in our power first to restore trees and to make them healthy. The last resort would only be removal. But we need to hold the city, continue to hold the city at a higher standard. And I believe that we certainly want to work with the property owners in maintaining their ability to work within their needs, but also keeping in mind what the benefits are to the public. So I think this ordinance has that balance. And with those suggested revisions and amendments, I can support this ordinance.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dan, I have a question, because I think there's a little confusion between what Councilmember Dickens just said and I think what the intention is. And I think it has to do with the revision that Tim made by striking the word multiple from the word family. Is that I think we're talking about two different things, and I can't actually find in the ordinance where we're spelling out that single family residential that we're only looking to protect the oak trees. Where is that actually spelled out separately from the multifamily?
What I'm looking at, and correct me if I'm wrong, in Section A where we said furthermore no oak tree, and then where it said greater than 2 inches in diameter when measured, 4 feet 6 inches base planted in the right-of-way may be removed in single-family residential zoned areas without first obtaining a permit.
Okay, so my take is that I think we might need to clean this up to make it a little bit clearer, in that I disagree that we should be removing the word multiple from the family, because we are looking at protecting more trees than just the oaks on city property and in our right-of-ways. It's only on the single-family areas where we're looking at protecting only the oaks. If we were to remove all, I agree. I don't want to try that here today, but I think we all can agree that the way it's been handled, maybe both sides, maybe one side, is that it didn't follow the proper procedures. So, therefore, I don't see this as some big brother stepping on individual rights. For the most part, this ordinance has never caused any real grief in the city until now, and that's because the procedures weren't followed. So, therefore, I'm going to have no problem with going along with this, other than I do think we need to clean up this little section here where we specify that we are only talking about oak trees 2 inches in diameter above 4'6" on single-family residential properties, and everywhere else, then it includes the oak trees and all the other trees. As far as I look at this, as really we're closing a loophole tonight. There was a loophole that you could basically butcher your trees. You could prune them to where they died, and there was no real way to stop that. And basically, I see that as we're closing that loophole tonight, and I think it's very appropriate. What was done there, I was appalled by. Let's see, what else do I have here? I think that might be it. So in closing, I guess, if we can, and maybe this is Tim, because since you had changes and we're not sure we're going with the changes, if we can maybe figure out a way to word that so that we're saying what I think what the intention was to say when we came here tonight, I'm completely fine with this ordinance. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I I first agree that we need a definition for street tree, whether it has to do with the right-of-way. And I, somewhere in here, because I had the same feeling in reading this, I actually read it, I think, closer to the way Councilman Arnold did, that in fact we were doing two things. We were protecting all 2-inch oak trees, and we were looking to protect all street trees in residential, and we needed to define what street trees were, not just 2-inch oak trees in the public right of way. Because I'm inclined to say that if it's in the public right of way, then the public needs to have some say in its potential removal. So in all areas, not just in commercial areas. And we have, as a rule, protected, granted it's only when it's in development, when it's actually threatened by development, but as a rule, we've protected oak trees as developments take place and ask people to develop around them, or at least make every effort to protect them before they remove them. Here we're begging to, frankly, just take out every oak tree, you know, that might potentially be there for development going forward. In fact, we saw a couple of those at the Planning Commission level. So I'm inclined to read the way, which is the way that I thought it was reading, which is, in fact, all 2-inch oak trees, and then all trees in the public right-of-way. And again, it doesn't mean that no tree can ever, ever, ever be removed, but it does mean that there is going to be some sort of a review process of trees that are on the street, that are in the public area. On the sort of the different levels of the way staff looks at it, I agree that the city's got to take the lead here and show what can and can't be done when sometimes trees absolutely, and I've seen some of the situations you're dealing with, and I think you've made every effort, and sometimes it just can't be done. But there's always going to be some judgment involved, and somebody's going to have to make a decision and may have to go through some of these processes when it's not clean, or when it's, you know, when maybe part of it is obvious, but the other 90% of it isn't. So I think that there's always going to be some judgment. I think the process set forward here, kind of mixed, frankly, about whether I would use Parks and Rec for this decision. I actually think we would move it to Architectural Review, and Architectural Review, because they do so much landscape review, would actually be the right committee. And the reason I understand that there's a relationship between the people who are making the decision and the commission, but it's just like a little, almost say a little higher review on that kind of an issue, as opposed to all of the other issues that Parks and Rec normally focuses on. But I'm not going to vote against it at this point, because it's been doing the, you know, it's in the process that way. But I think that's one thing we might consider, would actually be having Architectural review it instead of Parks and Rec. I had one other comment. Oh, this is a question. This has to do with the pruning. We're not regulating the pruning of any other tree, only trees in the public, only street trees, when we start talking about this no topping and no lines telling, or is that any tree?
Within the commercial zone, it would be any tree.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's another part that is actually still hard for me to follow. I realize technically I understand where you're going, and it almost seems like we ought to split it and have a separate segment just for, it may repeat itself, but a separate segment for single family residential, and a whole other segment for commercial that, you know, that are actually two have their own title in the code would be a lot clearer. I mean, this is clear tonight, but I'm not sure that a month from now I'd read it the same way.
Streets, removal of those trees along the street in the right of way, really has an impact on the entire neighborhood if you're trying to create a tree-lined street, urban design in particular neighborhoods.
Can I ask one? Just a vague idea of what we're normally looking at. Are we normally looking at the width of the sidewalk? Is the end of the public right of way?
What is the definition of that?
I think that might be where the problem is going to come in. Is on commercial property, and frankly, I think we can hold commercial property owners to a higher, you know, expectation of their knowledge of what different rules and regulations are than we would for the general public here. So, I guess, are we looking at is it because an arborist is going to be the one who needs to have this knowledge, that we would expect them to know whether it was in the right of way or not? Or is it, you know, if a citizen goes out and jumps up in his tree and starts trimming it, there's no reason to really expect that a residential, you know, somebody in a residential property would really know where the right of way begins and ends, or would even think to look at it if the tree's sitting in their front yard. Mm-hmm. 10 feet away from the street.
And I think we kind of addressed that back in May when we changed the ordinance to turning over those trees that were at one time publicly maintained trees in the private right-of-ways that were in the setback. And what we did then was basically turn over maintenance of the property. But I think I understand where you're going with that.
Yeah, and I do think that's a somewhat separate issue, but that is how you arrived at that decision. But right. I'm not sure that any of those property owners know.
And I think that would entail us taking an aggressive education effort.
Yeah, and that's where I'm a little hesitant about how we're going to make it work. I agree. I want to protect the street trees. And I just think that maybe we need a cleaner definition that says something like 6 feet from the curb or something, or something clear like that.
I guess what I'm sensing here, Dan and Steve, is that perhaps there are a few language areas in this ordinance that we need to tighten up. And so perhaps at some point in time this will come back with that enhanced language. I guess... my position on this, I think, is I first need to ask the question. I'll ask it very directly. And I, in deference to my colleague's statements earlier, I think the very fact that the property at Grand and Briscoe has been brought up several times, many of our speakers addressed it, so I don't think it's inappropriate to refer to it, and I intend to do that this evening. The question that I have is, particularly as it relates, just cut to the chase, as it relates to the pruning standards that we are adopting for commercial, multifamily, so on and so forth, what we have here now would hopefully prohibit what occurred on Grand and Briscoe from occurring again.
That's correct.
And the language will be tightened up and clarified, if it's not done so already, to make sure that doesn't happen again.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make a couple of very direct statements because I was involved and some of those facts did come to me. And I visited the property. And I don't have an issue with what was shared this evening by some of the tenants in that building, because I went out there and I actually saw where there was some severe cracking of sidewalks that could, in fact, pose a health hazard to some of the tenants, customers, and patients, and so on and so forth. So I think it's important to realize that when the city looked at that, as I understand it, the trees that were creating the majority of the damage, there was no issue there in terms of the fact that they should be removed. In fact, they were tagged for removal. That was never an issue. One of the presenters tonight made reference to a letter that you wrote, Mr. Belcher, I think, where you addressed the fact that it was okay for... remember the term, to do some pruning of roots. And according to our ordinance, that's an acceptable report, and that's all leading to the fact that I think that ordinance needs to come back with some cleaner language.
I think it'd be helpful at this point to get some consensus on specific areas you want us to come back and modify, and then we'll. I think we have a good feel in terms of the direction, so we can come back with specific language. But just make sure we have agreement on everybody from everybody in terms of those areas we want to possibly modify or enhance in terms of the language.
Okay, if you can maybe perhaps do a short read back, Steve, then maybe we'll try a
Do you need that in the form of a motion at this point, or can it be staff direction?
No, just staff direction at this point.
Okay. Well, we first need to determine among the council whether it's the will of the council to bring this back with perhaps some of the expanded definitions that you mentioned and some of the other items. Maybe if we can do a read-back summary of what you heard from us this evening.
Okay.
Then we can chime in as if that encompasses the entire scope of the direction.
Okay. I think the majority of them, but Tim and Kelly, maybe if you can jump in, because I think I might have missed a couple. The first one that was made was definition of lion's tail.
Lion's tail, we got it.
Okay. A revised definition or more specific definition of street trees. What's the definition of street tree? Is it related to the as it relates to the public right of way?
You know, I might add that to that. That I think your idea of actually determining what a regulated tree is and then list all the, is another way of accomplishing that. But because a street tree would be defined and would be one of the regulated trees, might be simpler.
Okay,
might be a choice.
That was actually kind of a separate one I had as related, but that one's okay also. And then some wording regarding notification of the Planning Commission, and then I think we also discussed some follow-up policy, a policy change specifying notification of the Tree Guild. And I have written down Planning Commission, but I think you also said ARC, didn't you?
Also correct. Mm-hmm.
Those were the key ones I had, but I was thinking there was a couple other.
Well, and then the general issue in 12-1607-0A, there seemed to be a split. I think Jim preferred to only deal with oak trees in the right of way, and I think Jim Dickens, Councilmember Dickens, and Councilmember Guthrie indicated that all trees in the public right-of-way and oak trees of the specified size, if I understood you correctly. And there's quite a dramatic difference between the two. So,
yeah, and I would fall into the Councilmember Guthrie's definition. Basically, as defined here is how I also agree.
In other words, to include street trees, but we need a better definition and clarification of that.
But my only comment and concern with that is that if we go that is expanding the scope of what we've done in, pretty dramatically, and primarily what we're talking about is all oak trees, period, of a 2-inch diameter or greater as defined. That includes backyards, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Side yards and everything. And I think personally, I think that's overstepping, and I think it's going to be a difficult thing to regulate. First of all. And I think it may go beyond what we're trying to achieve here in regards to a public land, streetscape, because now we're getting into side yards and other types of areas, primarily based on the fact that an oak tree is considered a native tree to the area and so forth. There's lots of other trees that are native to the area that might hold a value to one person as opposed to another. And that's where I think that, personally, I think we need to draw the line with what's in the public's best interest. And the public's best interest, in my opinion, is looking at the tree line, the treescape, and if we kept it within that right-of-way, that's just where I'm coming from. I think it's going to be a little overstepping, in my opinion. I couldn't support moving that ordinance further into private property.
One option, I don't know if this would address your concern, but one option, and you alluded it to earlier, is maintaining the restriction anywhere on the property on oak trees, but maybe significantly increase the diameter so that we really focus on just saving those very old trees that are a huge resource, I think, to the community and potentially to a future, you know,
our landmark tree ordinance, that maybe we should be more proactive and work with the landowner to maybe see that same value. And I think that would serve the same purpose.
Mr. Mayor, could I?
Go ahead.
The only problem, I don't disagree with you on that, but what I would say is if we prohibit the taking of oak trees, we could then apply that standard if we want to allow an oak tree to be taken on private property and determine that it is not a specimen tree. But I think we have a difficulty right now if we haven't identified it as a specimen tree and it's on private property, single family, that we could find ourselves losing the tree before we ever would have had the opportunity to protect it. So I would rather err more on the side of saying we're going to protect those trees, and if a landowner wants to come in and take the tree, we're not saying you can't. You just need to come in and say this is what we want to do, because I think we have seen examples where people have bought homes, have torn down the home, have clear-cut the lot, which included oak trees that could have been saved, and had those oak trees been in place when the plan came for review, we may have asked that those trees be saved. But because we were never given the opportunity to talk about those options, we lost those trees. So I would rather err right now on the side of protecting the oak trees specifically. We're not expanding it, I don't think, that large, and I don't see the city of acting in a malice way where we're just trying to say you can't take trees down at all. We have lots of examples where we've worked with developers where we've allowed them to take oaks when they mitigate. So I don't think our track record is such that we wouldn't allow it. But I think it's a little bit of a safety net for us.
Our guess was that it wouldn't be a huge problem, because most residents, when it comes to oak trees and mature oak trees, they want to save them. They are an actual value to the property in most cases. They increase the property value. So we didn't expect a large number of cases we'd need to be dealing with. And they're ones that most people are cognizant to the value, and therefore a little easier to deal with than expanding that beyond to some of the other tree species. But
as a point of discussion, I if that's the council's approach, then I would probably want to define exactly that, then, that our intent is to not necessarily look at saving every oak tree with a 2-inch diameter, because that's not really what we're trying to do. We're really trying to look at those trees that have more of a historic landmark, those that have probably been around for a long time, and we need to define that then, and as to what our intent is. And if that's what the council chooses to do, then I would say that we direct staff to bring that language back.
Well, I guess my point, my position on this would be to, I think I would concur with Councilmember Arnold on this, and the only reason why is because of the, unless we really truly focus on definition, what is the streetscape, what is a side yard, what is a backyard, what if there's no fence? I think we're opening up a whole area of issues here that perhaps we, could be cleaner if we just focused on the issue of oak trees. And I don't know if I would support. I would be able to support perhaps increasing the diameter. I think that's reasonable. But I think that would be about it. Anyone else have a question, comment? Okay.
You guys wanted time.
Do you have enough direction here, and what are we looking at in terms of it coming back to us?
Okay. Let me read it. If we could just take a moment to read back and make sure we have a consensus. So I think we just said we have consensus on increasing the diameter for the oak trees. But other than that, leave the restrictions in place as proposed. We're going to better define and clarify street trees. We would want to continue to protect the street trees, but there'd be a better clarification on what a street tree is. And then also our earlier reference to defining that the pruning standards apply to all regulated trees, and we'll provide a definition.
Public hearing. Tim, do we need a motion to continue?
If we're continuing to a date certain, then we won't have to re-advertise. If not, we'll just continue it to a date uncertain and re-advertise. It's up to the council. But if we can do it to a date certain, we save some money.
We could continue. If something happened, we could continue it on that date as well. Yeah.
The only concern on that meeting, it's a fair. It's a. We don't have a lot of items on that agenda. I believe the Castle Rock. You sure? Okay, October 25th should be okay.
Make a motion of the council that we continue this item to the October 25th meeting.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Takes us to item 10, continued business. We have none. 11, new business. 11A, consideration of adoption of an interim urgency ordinance suspending acceptance or processing of applications for development of any portion of property immediately adjacent to Roy Grande Creek.
Good evening again, Mr. Mayor and council members. This item is in response to a council direction in July to evaluate the city's regulations, practices, and procedures related to the development and close proximity of creeks and the implementation of policies in the agricultural and conservation open space element of the general plan. Although the city has some limited requirements for certain discretionary projects relating to the dedication of creek easements, there are inconsistencies remaining relating to the updated general plan policies, particularly with those concerning safeguarding important creek resources and the ability to address issues such as sedimentation, erosion, stream bank stabilization, public trail potential, to name a few. The city can expect to continue to expect applications for the development and redevelopment and sensitive infill properties, including those containing areas within 25 feet of top of a creek bank. As a result of issues identified in the course of evaluating recent project construction and applications, it was deemed important to address the intent of these policies and clarify specific application of prior application to future development proposals. In order to prevent development of such properties while study is underway, state law provides for certain urgency measures that are effective for 45 days, and this has potential for extension after public noticing and a supermajority vote of the City Council. It is recommended that the City Council adopt an interim urgency ordinance suspending the acceptance and processing of building or grading permits or land use applications for development of properties within 25 feet of the top of a creek bank or edge of riparian vegetation, whichever is greater, abutting any creeks or tributaries within the city of Arroyo Grande in order to study foreseeable ramifications or current and immediate threat of such development to the public health, safety, and welfare. This ordinance is intended to apply to new projects which are not currently vested with the city. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, perhaps based on the letter we were just handed and perhaps some of the other questions, Teresa, maybe you can clarify in lay terms what you mean by vested projects.
We mean that we mean to apply this suspension to any new projects that haven't been accepted and are being processed by the city.
Okay, good. Thank you. additional, yes, go ahead.
Let me just add to that a bit. that's correct, and I think to add absolute definition to it, we're using the term acceptance as it's defined in the Permit Streamlining Act, Government Code Section 65920 at SEC. So there's a definite meaning when it's been accepted for processing by staff when the application has been determined to be complete. That's considered acceptance under the Permit Streamlining Act. Anything that's been accepted for processing and is in the process would not be affected by the moratorium. Other projects that don't meet that definition and building permits and grading permits that haven't been issued to this day would be affected. So obviously, Track 1998 or Track 01001, it's been redesignated, would not be affected by this, and it's not intended to affect that.
Okay. Any other questions in the staff report, Teresa?
No, I think staff's done a great job of laying out the issues.
All right. This is not a public hearing. However, we will allow members of the audience to come forward. If anyone in the audience would like to make a comment on this ordinance, this would be an opportunity or this item.
Evening, Mr. Mayor and members of City Council. I represent a number of property owners that have some particular type of development plans or.
Can I get you to state your name for the record?
John Belcher, I'm sorry. Applications or have been this is here isn't because of discretionary projects. The reason of this is here is the city is concerned about the ministerial project, the building permit application and the grading permit application, and they're specifically mentioned in here as things that they're worried about. So they're worried because under those permit applications, the city doesn't have discretion to condition and impose a regulation for a creek setback. So I have a very concrete suggestion of how to tackle this issue. As we saw in the PACE application, the city has made a determination that the general plan setback of 25 feet from top of bank is not a zoning regulation. So therefore, the staff is concerned that it can't be imposed as a regulation on a building permit or grading permit application because it's only in the general plan, not in the zoning ordinance. So sure enough, within 45 days or soon, you're going to get some version of an ordinance that's going to say, I'm guessing, it's going to say, from now on, all building permits have to have 25-foot setback as a standard. Maybe there'll be some leeway for whatever emergencies or I don't know what, but constitutional protection. But that's what this is all about. You're adopting, apparently going to adopt or recommended to adopt an urgency ordinance because somebody might file for a building permit and they won't be able to impose the general plan setback of 25 feet. Now, the first thing you should do is exempt all discretionary permits from this urgency ordinance, and that gives a property owner a chance to come in and make an application and basically submit themselves to the CEQA process, submit themselves to all the discretion and conditions that you can impose, which are limitless. So once you do that, you're left with the ministerial permits, grading permit, building permit. What you should do then is say, if the project is 25 feet from top of bank, and that's what the general plan provision says. If the project is 25 feet from top of bank, it should not be subject to the urgency ordinance. Why would you do that? Why would you impose a moratorium on a project that came to you that was 25 feet from the top of bank, just like your general plan says? And so this leads to one other question. Why is the language of the ordinance different from your general plan? Your general plan is very specific. It says 25 feet from top of bank. And it says you're allowed to remove riparian vegetation within the 25 feet if you're in an urban area, and it's discouraged outside an urban area. That's what your general plan says. That's the constitution for the city of Arroyo Grande. Your urgency ordinance, for some reason, has a clerical mistake in it, I guess. It says that all projects which are 25, that this prohibit applies to projects which are 25 feet from top of bank or from riparian vegetation, whichever is greater. Now, I know in parts of this county, you could be 100 feet from a bank. You could be 200 feet from a bank and have riparian vegetation. You could have one willow branch, which is riparian vegetation, And for the life of me, I don't understand why that language is in your urgency ordinance. It should be removed. In fact, I think it's illegal. It's inconsistent with your general plan. Even urgency ordinances are required to be consistent with your general plan. So you shouldn't impose an ordinance which adds some new standard that's not even in your general plan. That is to say, measuring a project 25 feet from riparian vegetation. That's not in your general plan. So by exempting discretionary permits, anybody you wanted to with property adjacent to a creek could come in, and you can impose CEQA, condition them out the world. You don't need them to be covered by an urgency ordinance. You ought to let these people have a chance anyway. If a project comes in 25 feet from top of bank, you've achieved, for a ministerial permit, you've achieved what you're seeking, which is application of your general plan specifically to ministerial permits. And I think that's legitimate. I don't know how it was that you ended up with an ordinance structure that's inconsistent with your general plan or your general plan provision that can't be applied to a building permit. Seems to me like if your general plan says 25 feet, then your building permits ought to be 25 feet. I understand that. And apparently the city staff is basically alarmed there might be a flood of these applications, and they want you to have an urgency ordinance, or maybe the council is asking to have this urgency ordinance. So those are the two technical things I think that could make this actually address the concerns that are real. To do otherwise, to me, is the broadest net you could possibly cast and not even consistent with your general plan. The second point is that the definition of projects which are not covered by this would technically not allow the Pace brothers to refile the application on the lot on, is it Whiteley Street? I believe it is. As you recall, they came up to you. There was a bunch of feedback. The permit was denied without...
I'm an architect. I'm a civil engineer. Part of my business is maintaining options. I think what you do by approving this ordinance is give away your options. It's a moratorium. You have no more choices. Take a look at whatever may come before you. Evaluate it on its own merits. Take into account skill that may be applied to a project. A 25-foot setback from the top of creek may be appropriate. You may have projects where a varied setback is desirable, more appropriate. You may have projects where you enhance the creek area by putting them in an area of the riparian vegetation. All I'm asking is that you maintain your options. You maintain the ability to look at these projects and make your own choice. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hello, I'm Scott Pace, and 123 Whiteley Street is the address that was just brought up. I'd like to ask the city council and say that I'm strongly opposed to this. I've been in the system for 6 months trying to get a building permit, basically, just trying to get a building permit, and I'm still working through that system, and so I would hope that at the very least I would be exempt from this. Also, I've got another property in escrow that I've been working with a lot of people in the city to take care of a FEMA problem on Highway 227. It does go against the creek. I believe that would have a discretionary permit. That would be a subdivision. That would fall under the general plan, and the 25-foot setback would be, accounted for, not like the Whiteley House building permit that we brought before you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one, we will close the public comment portion of 11A. I had a couple of quick questions, Tim. Can you briefly discuss the relationship of an urgency ordinance to an established general plan?
I'd be glad to, Your Honor. And oftentimes I have to thank Mr. Belcher for clarifying issues and for framing them appropriately. In this case, he did so. Well, I don't necessarily believe that what he deems his concerns, the real concerns, are the council's concerns. That notwithstanding, this urgency ordinance, and this is an urgency ordinance based on urgent circumstances, as are very clearly delineated in the recitals and in the ordinance, it's enacted pursuant to 65-858. And let me read you a portion of it so that you can understand the relationship between an urgency ordinance and the general plan or a change to the general plan, because we all know that the general plan can be amended in your discretion. Without following the procedures otherwise required prior to the adoption of a zoning ordinance, the legislative body of a county, city, including a charter city, and county, to protect the public safety, health, and welfare, may adopt as an urgency measure an interim ordinance prohibiting any uses that may be in conflict with a contemplated general plan, specific plan, or zoning proposal that the legislative body, planning commission, or planning department is considering or studying or intends to study within a reasonable time. The underpinnings of this are specifically that there may be a need to change the general plan. And the planning department perceived that as soon as it started looking at this, that there were conflicts and ambiguities and factual situations that were coming before us that we felt we weren't prepared to deal with. And it became abundantly clear as we saw various forms of applications and applied it to various hypotheticals. It needs to be studied. There may need to be general plan amendments, and we don't know that until we call a timeout and look closely at the issue. And that is the exact purpose of urgency ordinances. It's somewhat ludicrous to think and to say that the urgency ordinance is in conflict with your general plan. The urgency ordinance is calling a timeout just so that you could look at that issue. Is there a need to change the general plan? Is there a need to change zoning ordinances to make them consistent with your intentions? And that's what we're doing. And the studies will end up giving you the information and the facts that you need to make those determinations. So I don't know where Mr. Belcher was coming from, but that's the law, and that's the basis upon which you're adopting this. So you do have discretion.
There are different policies regarding different things, and in some cases, if we just said top of bank, we wouldn't be addressing a potential need for preservation or protection with whatever measures for riparian habitat or that might be just immediately adjacent to top of bank. So for this 45-day period or for the term of this study, we included that area for safeguarding as well.
Okay, and my understanding would be that this would be including the Pace Brother project on Whiteley. Is that correct? We are not trying to exempt that. We're the Track 1998, as it was formerly known as, is exempt, but not the Whiteley project. Is that correct?
Well, there is no formal application pending on the Pace Brothers. I feel that is an application that has been accepted for processing, has been provided direction by the council, and while the appeal was denied without prejudice, it was clear that it would come back as a revised version of the project that was previously submitted. So we have a project on file that will be revised. It was denied without prejudice and direction provided. So I fully intend to process that on a case by case. My concern and the reason that I feel that this is an appropriate urgency issue is if we have a dozen current cases pending along creek setback areas, there is a potential for double or triple that, and we would be totally diverted from the council's direction of study creek policy by a rush of individual cases that would come at us in this immediate concern about what the policy might be. So I feel an urgency ordinance is necessary to prevent new applications and new developments from being the attention getter. We should follow the council's direction and return with clarifications to CREEP policy and obtain Planning Commission and council direction before we accept new applications. And new applications is just that, not the continuing ones that we've identified tonight.
So your intention would be to try to still apply what we learned from the study to the PACE project? Or because I totally understand why this is coming forward. I've seen the Blau project where there was discussion as to whether there should be a setback from the setback, and there's obviously some serious confusion as to what is the purpose of the 25 feet. Should there be any development as far as yard inside that area? Should you be allowed to remove the riparian habitat vegetation that's in there? So I understand, and I think this is very appropriate. I'm just a little confused why we would be exempting the Pace Brother project when I think that's a very one. I'm sorry. I do think you've created a lot of this problem yourself. Had you done a PUD or a lot, you know. So from that standpoint, it's very unfortunate. But I think you were given a lot of warnings early on that there could be very serious problems with this lot. And so with that said, I don't feel that we should be maybe doing something here today that tomorrow we're going to be saying, wait a second, we shouldn't have done that. So,
And I don't think that would be the case. We will continue to have discretion over that project. It was a discretionary decision with viewshed review, and direction was provided. Additional technical information, including biology studies, will be submitted as a part of the clarification and revised project. But because there is a project on file, and it will be coming back as a revision to that project, I wouldn't consider that a new application. So we could process under the previous application numbers and continue to provide decision, and the decision will include discretion as to what the council and planning commission feel is the appropriate setback in that particular case. I think we can deal with the projects that are pending, Creekside projects by De Blau, 01001 by Castle Rock, Pace's project. I don't want to necessarily get into defining what would be the appropriate treatment of something within 25 feet of the creek or riparian on properties along Tally Ho. There are literally hundreds of properties along the creek that we will have to notify in this 45-day period to come up with a extension, if an extension is necessary, and I believe that the creek policy will.
And I have no problem supporting this. I'm a little hesitant to exclude some of the projects you talked about, but understanding that we're going to use a lot of discretion on those projects going forward, and they may find themselves they're not going to get a shortcut, even though they're exempt from this urgency ordinance. But other than that, I can definitely support it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, you know, it's interesting from the public standpoint sometimes when they look at you know, some of the language in the general plan and say, well, gosh, this is, you know, why don't you, if you just stuck with this, then it would make it really easy. And yet, when you take a comprehensive look, and we only have a portion of what staff has presented this evening, but take a comprehensive look at many of the goals and objectives within our general plan, you find that as you read it, you kind of have to go, well, wait a minute, are these conflicting, and what are we? What is the intent? And this is the problem that I've been faced with in regards to some of the language in the general plan as it's stated. When we adopted this back in 2001, you know, I thought that, well, gosh, it seems simple to me. You know, this is what we're going to do. But then when you have the Planning Commission, the Architectural Review, you have staff, you have other colleagues taking a look at it, and also the public, boy, you come up with three or four different interpretations of what that same objective is going to be. And what happens then is that I think we serve the public better if we can define what it is that we're looking for. Then everyone's playing from the same rules. And what we're finding right now is I think there's some confusion between the different bodies within the city structure, staff, and then the development community saying, well, gosh, you know, this seems so simple. Why don't we just do this? Or it seems so simple, but in my case, I need this exception. It's like, well, okay, then how does that relate to what we're really talking about? It's not that simple. And I know from my perspective in working in the last several years with what's been going on with the Zone 1 and Zone 1A, this is going to be a critical issue. And it's not just a matter of making sure that we're developing outside the floodplain. It's not just a matter of making sure that we are protecting our riparian corridor and the environmental concerns, but it's also a concern of erosion control, both during construction and after construction, and once these developments, whether they're large or small, are put in place. We need to look at a comprehensive approach and connect some of the language that we have in the general plan in regards to good creek management, so that we're not causing additional problems downstream. And that's an issue that's been looming large, I think, in our minds as we work with the folks down in that area. So I can support the ordinance. I certainly believe that what staff is telling us this evening is that the projects that are in the pike are not going to be affected. They can move forward as presented, and we're just talking about making sure that if there's a potential of additional projects that are going to be covering this area, that we do hold those back until we get better clarification, so that we can hopefully, as a staff and as a decision-making body, be closer and in sync, so that we can serve the public better. So I think this is going to work for us in the long run. So I support.
Thank you, Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I too can support the emergency ordinance as proposed. I'll say that having sat through the general plan process and then been on planning commission afterward, that a lot of policy ends up having to be project driven. That the project comes forward and we really haven't had a chance, and we're doing it on the fly. And this is an opportunity to go back on one more thing, and I'm sure it's not going to be the last one, to go back and actually formally look at this. So. I certainly support this. I also think that in good faith, we did not intend to shut the Pace Brother project out. We gave feedback with the intention of making a discretionary review of that. And so if staff can do it the way you're saying it, then that works fine with me. If you need a formal, okay from us in some form of a motion, that's okay too. But I do think this is very appropriate. At times I thought maybe we should have done with some of the mixed-use areas when we didn't have policy in place yet and we were actually having to approve mixed-use projects. Totally, totally sky blue and just really making it up on the spot. So I can definitely support this. Thank you.
Thank you. You at least doing its job. As far as the situation that has changed. I'm happy to hear that my colleagues have used the term downstream, because that really defines the changing circumstances here. We do have a responsibility to the flood control zones and segments downstream of us. They don't create the sedimentation that's flowing into their flood control and impairing the water flow through their channel down there. We're contributing to that problem. So what's happening here is a heightened awareness, as I see it, of this council to take a hard look at the manner in which we create those kinds of impacts upstream. That's what this is about. Not doing that, in my view, is walking away from our responsibilities. So I believe this ordinance is comprehensive in terms of what we discovered during this hiatus, if you will, People don't like the word moratorium, so we'll call it a timeout. But we intend to make good use of it. And I believe that when projects do come back for a second run, we will have learned some things. We can perhaps apply some new knowledge so that it might help a project that comes back to us instead of impairing it or trying to impair it. I think it's important for us to look at things like behavior between riparian vegetation and slope stability, the relationship between slope stability and erosion control, the relationship between erosion control and sedimentation in that creek bed that washes downstream and causes problems during heavy rains for people down there who can be extremely adversely affected by it. So that's why this ordinance is here, at least in my view. And one of the reasons why I believe it is appropriate, and one of the reasons why I'm going to support it, and I would hope that Rob, and I know this is not the only thing you have going, but I would hope that we can do whatever we need to do to ensure that these issues are explored extensively, and you know, whatever kinds of strategies and policies that we need to come up with to start making some headway in resolving these problems, you know, those need to be, I think, embodied in whatever plan comes back to us or whatever course of action is defined for us. So I applaud this as a first step and anxiously await the results of it. Those are my comments. If there's nothing else, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose an interim urgency ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande suspending acceptance or processing of applications for development of any portion of property immediately adjacent to Arroyo Grande Creek, Tally Ho Creek, Meadow Creek, or Creek tributaries within the City of Arroyo Grande.
I'll second that.
My comments can wait, but we did want to just tweak the title. The title reads suspending acceptance or processing, and that may have been some of the confusion out there. The text actually reads acceptance and processing, so if we can just make that clerical modification as a part of the motion.
That's fine.
Okay, and the second's fine.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you.
I hate to interject again. One last thing. Because of the complexity and the staff limitations and the budget limitations, it is likely that we're going to have to extend this further than the 45 days, and we'll probably be bringing it back in two meetings or perhaps three meetings. And then I did want to chime in that with regard to the unique nature of that PACE application, it was staff's intention to treat it as having been accepted for processing, and it was staff's intention to continue to process it. Because of the unique nature, it had conned with the council, it had been given a rough direction and was denied without prejudice. So it's based on that very unique nature of that particular matter that staff had intended to process it.
Okay. Does that address your concerns, Mr. Pace, on this one? Okay. All right. That's fine with me, Tim. I would just assume if we have to extend this, I don't want to shortcut this. So if we need more time to do a thorough job, then we'll take whatever time we need. But it's a problem we got to get our arms around. So. Okay, reallocated, and we're hopeful that the Slow Cog Board will reallocate that money to South County. Specifically, our concern was to try and determine whether or not we could advance the Briscoe Halcyon project through the planning phase and at least get it ready for construction funding. And I think that was also the intent of some of the other board members representing other jurisdictions, was to see whether or not perhaps we could accomplish construction of some of the less expensive projects, but advance several of them through this reallocation, through the planning process, so that they could be I guess, in the queue for construction funding. So that brings us to the point of meeting with Ron DeCarli, and Steve, if you could kind of share a little bit of information about how that meeting went to the degree that we can.
Sure. And, yeah, a lot of people have asked me if I've, you know, when that decision was made to free up that money, if I was looking into it. I can assure you the very next morning at 8 o'clock, as soon as their offices were open, I was on the phone to Mr. DeCarli to see what we could do. We did meet just recently on a couple of occasions to discuss strategies on how to reprogram some of that money to our project. Their decision has been they're not really reprogramming that money specifically at this time. What they're proposing to do is really put it back into the pot that'll be programmed during their next STIP cycle, which is coming up in the next few months. And so now we need to focus on how we can become competitive in that process. The good news of it is that means that where they in the past they were saying there won't be hardly any money in that cycle, now there is going to be some potential money in the cycle. The problem we're currently experiencing is timing. We've completed the PSR, as you know, the first step in the planning process for the Briscoe project. We added, if you recall, we added some options in there that we really wanted to pursue because they solve some problems beyond just the interchange. They also would solve a problem at Grand Avenue, the Grand Avenue intersection, which is another intersection that we're projecting that level of service F in the future. That brought up some concerns by Caltrans, which requires a design exception that they've never approved. So that document has never been certified by Caltrans. The certification process is what allows the project then to go forward and program all the way through construction. Our plan was to get that ability through certification of the PANED, which is what we're doing now. The problem is we're still a few months off of being able to complete that. Their first reaction was, well, you're just not going to be able to apply for this money because the project's not going to be ready. So we delved into that further and worked with them and came up with some options that's not completely true. There's nothing that prevents the board, for example, of setting aside money if the board were to choose to do that, reserve the money until the PANED is done. The other thing that I think we're going to pursue that's even more optimistic is the SLOCOG board really makes up the rules of how the projects are categorized and ranked. And I think there's some flexibility in there in terms of what the definition is of the date that the PANED would actually have to be completed by in order to be considered ready for the next stage. And so one of the things we're focusing on is trying to work with the board through the mayor's leadership and see if we can modify that criteria to basically say it just needs to be done by the time by the meeting that SLOCOG takes the action to approve the projects rather than at the time of the application. So it seems fairly logical that try to do that, and then we just need to work with the other board members and CACHO and see if we can get that completed.
Okay. We're working on it. The other report, South County Sanitation District, went to both of those meetings, and pretty much as Councilmember Dickens used to report, the plan is running according to standards, and everything is looking good there. Our chlorinator, that very expensive project, is nearing completion, and I think I brought in some pictures and showed it to you some time ago. I'll probably bring some more in. I think we're going to have our next meeting out at the sanitation plant, so we'll get some pictures of that project. And again, you really can't appreciate the significance of it until you see the size and scale and the amount of concrete and steel that went into it. Again, all done with a view towards
nothing from the joint powers, but the Water Resources Advisory Committee. We had a report on saltwater intrusion into Morro Bay's wells, And one of the concerns was right now that if you, depending on how you do a study of your well's capacity, it can actually indicate that you have more water available than the reality. And so that was one of the suggestions I wanted to make, is that in this groundwater study that we're doing right now, that, and I believe Steve and I, we talked about this, that they are going to be looking at that to make sure that what we're seeing in our wells is not just how full they are, but that the actual reservoir does not have salt in it, or if it does, they're subtracting that out so that we have a real accurate assessment of where we are with our groundwater, because that is definitely a concern that they are facing now, that they have overestimated how much water they have available. So other than that, that covers it. Thank you.
Very good. That will take us to item 13, city council member items. Says none. Item 14, city manager items. None this evening?
None this evening.
Any council communication, correspondence?
I just have one little thing. I'd like to thank staff for a wonderful Harvest Festival. It was excellent. Everybody I talked to had a great time. The mayor forced me, twist my arm to be his delegate for the pie eating contest. And I must say, I did come in first out of council members. It was only third overall, but, you know, I wanted to make sure I represented us well. But it was everybody I talked to just had an excellent time, so I really wanted to say thanks to the staff for doing such a great job.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. And a lot of the staff were involved. I didn't want to recognize, I'd be remiss in not recognizing all the folks that were involved in that. One of the, actually, my concerns in being involved in the Harvest Festival is I'm always afraid the community will view this as a city event. While the city's involved, it's an event. One of the things that makes it such a special event, it's totally organized by volunteers, and I happen to be co-chairing this year. Debbie Seidenberg's the other co-chair. We had a great committee of volunteers. All the different service clubs and community groups in the community participate, and then it's totally funded by sponsorships through the community. So it's just a great community effort, and we had a lot of people working hard, and we're very pleased and appreciate all the community support. And all the council was there in different capacities. We appreciate your participation. Do you have any? Did you have some
staff
content? Yeah. I think Tim had.
I'm going to say something, Tim. It better be contrite.
Well.
And there better be fines.
No fines. My daughter Haley was an unofficial observer, actually in the very front row of the mayor. Supervisor cow milking contest, and she indicates that she feels that there may have been some alteration by the mayor of Pismo Beach. There may have been some supplementation of the milk. We're looking into protests and perhaps setting aside the result and having a re-milk off. And we're looking closely at some of the videotapes, but she insists she saw a flask pulled out of her coat, and that she poured a liquid white substance into the bucket. And if we can verify that information, we're going to ask that you step back up to the plate, Mr. Mayor, and milk again. And Cacho is a tough one to beat, but I think you can do it.
Well, I think if I was afforded the same courtesy of practice that Supervisor Shajan was, and I want to congratulate him for his, you know, obviously display of skill in that area. But at the same time, you know, I think I could have made a better showing had I had the opportunity to practice. And, at, you know, at the same facility, obviously, that other members in that contest had to practice. But that's another issue.
I don't want to belabor the point, but I do recall you asking at the last council meeting if anyone had cows that they'd be willing to spare, and I do recall raising my hand, but that's not relevant.
Well, I expected a little more, how shall I say, enthusiasm as far as scheduling and all of those other kinds of things, but we'll get to that. And there's always next year. Next year, I think there's going to be a brighter focus on this one activity, and I will be ready. And I want to thank and congratulate Councilmember Arnold for stepping into the pie-eating contest on my behalf. So I was so humiliated with the outcome of the cow-milking contest. I couldn't hang around for the other one. So, all right, enough of that.